So I think you have spent some time in dual mindfulness. Probably we can discuss a little bit more on what's really going on there. Last time we discussed mostly related to the Anapanasati, where we understood that Buddha explains Anapanasati in a very beautiful manner. So he starts with a very simple way, starting just establishment of mindfulness. And just before that, actually, the basic preparations are there, preparing our body and finding out a suitable place and where to keep the attention. Finding out a quiet place is significant because it's difficult to meditate at a sort of a noisy place. And once we found such a quiet place, then we have to sit in a comfortable posture, and most suitable one is the cross-leg posture. But if it is difficult for you, you can sit on a chair, but that chair can't be extremely comfortable. If you have a very comfortable chair, most probably you might fall asleep. But on the other hand, if you find a kind of a strenuous posture, that also not good, because then the pain available throughout the body might hinder the process. Therefore, it is necessary to have a kind of a middle posture where it is not too much comfortable. At the same time, it is not that uncomfortable. Once you found such comfortable posture, then you have to establish mindfulness at the nostril. So fairly closer to the nostril. And you don't need to find the exact location of the breath, that you can find later as your mindfulness grows. So once you found everything set up, then you can gently close your eyes, and then you can start watching the breath. So as I said, today we are simply staying at the nostril, and say the breath passes. Assume, now hope you can see me. Assume this little piece is showing or sort of modeling the breath, and this has the middle, beginning, this area as the middle, and this as the end. Now I am here, now still I am watching, but still no breath I can feel. Now the beginning of the in-breath, now the middle of the in-breath, now the end of the in-breath, it has gone. Now I am staying still at the nostril. I'm not following the in-breath. I'm still staying at the nostril, but I can't feel anything right now. And then suppose now out-breath is happening. Now it is coming this way. Now I am experiencing the beginning of the out-breath, then the middle of the out-breath, the end of the out-breath. Now it has gone. Now I am not following the out-breath. I'm simply staying at the nostril. So that is one simple principle, kind of a law rule that we need to keep in our mind. We are not following the breath. Rather, we have to keep our attention at the nostril. As I said, the mindfulness is referred as like a gatekeeper, where he is doing his task at the gate. So he may be observing the visitor, investigating the visitor, but he is not following the visitor to the in-house. On the other hand, he is not following the outgoing visitor as well. So he is simply doing his task, his duty at the gate. Similarly, the mindfulness, once we establish as a nostril, we have to maintain there. And more and more, each and every in-breath, when it is passing in and out, we are observing one by one. So it's very much like an anchoring place for the mind, because mind needs some sort of a place, a position to hang around. So now we are introducing this kind of a new place, and this is called a kammatthana or primary object. That is the working place for the mind. Every time, again and again, we are trying to associate this place, and more we are associating this place, as a result of this association, certain qualities are developing in the mind, inside the mind. Actually, we have no intention to find, there is no significance in finding out details available in the breath. Either it is longer, shorter, cold, or warmer, doesn't matter. But why we are finding out them, why we are observing so accurately, is to improve the qualities in the mind. More our sort of qualities, clear comprehension, accuracy, all these things are developed in the mind. More and more precisely, we can find out these qualities available in the breath. So we are using breath as a kind of a technique. This is a tool. Using that tool, we are developing the mental qualities. That is the idea behind here. So once we reach the first stage, that is the first stage is sato vasa sati, sato pasa sati. The second stage, Buddha says, digang vasa santo, rasang vasa santo. Second and third are related to the longer or shorter. So we are trying to find out the differences between in-breath and out-breath, whether in-breath happens in a certain nostril, out-breath happens in another nostril, or using both nostrils. So we are now sort of inquiring. So we are a little bit curious about this process. Rather than simply in a boring manner, we are looking at it, we are applying some curiosity to the process and finding out, is it longer, is it shorter? So this is something helping to arouse panya, arouse wisdom. So at this moment, actually, we are not calling it as wisdom, but we typically call it as sampajanya, clear comprehension. We clearly know. So what we clearly know right now, what we know is that whether the breath is warmer, whether the breath is cold, cooler, or whether the breath is longer when compared to the previous. So typically we think all the in-breaths are similar and all the out-breaths are similar. But maybe once our mindfulness has further refined, we may be able to understand two consecutive in-breaths are not exactly similar. Consecutive out-breaths are also not exactly similar. There may be slight differences. So that is where Buddha asking us to find out whether all in-breaths are similar. So maybe when compared to the previous in-breath, the present in-breath may be longer. When compared to the previous out-breath, the present out-breath may be longer. Similarly, when compared to the previous in-breath, present in-breath may be shorter and the present out-breath may be shorter. So this long short is compared to the time. That means for a longer period of time, now I am experiencing a breath. For a shorter period of time, I have experienced a breath. Compared to the previous, I have a kind of a understanding, little bit of memory about the previous one. Now I can find out whether the present one is longer or shorter. This paves the way to further refine our mindfulness. Now Buddha gives us another challenge, that is the fourth stage. That is to find out the complete in-breath and the complete out-breath, and if possible in between in-breath and out-breath. So Buddha says sabbakaya patisangvedi asasissamiti sikkhati, where the whole in-breath, whole out-breath, we are trying to find out the totality, we are trying to see the big picture of the whole breath. So it's like a bell curve where it starts with a very smooth growing phase, and then reaching the middle bell part where kind of a threshold is available, where we can see or we can feel the breath properly, and then it starts to diminish, starts to reduce, and that is the ending, and it's fading away and ultimately disappears. Before the beginning of the out-breath, there's a little gap, and then the beginning of the out-breath, that is also very similar to a bell curve, where the beginning of the out-breath is happening very slowly, very gently, very softly, and then the intensity increases. Now we feel it properly, well. Now we are in the middle. Now after that, it fades away and it disappears, and now we are at the end. And again, before the beginning of next in-breath, there's a little gap. So if we are able to find out all these cycles, all these components, parts of this whole process, that indicates our mindfulness has fairly refined. actually you don't need to sort of demarcate, okay, this is the exact boundary of the beginning, this is the exact boundary of the end, like that. There is no such boundary, but comparatively with some common sense, it is enough to understand, okay, this is the beginning part, this is the middle part, and this is the ending part. So that kind of an understanding is more than enough. Actually, once you are doing this experiment, then your mind further and further calms down, because you can't find out the beginning, the middle, the end of the in-breath and out-breath with a distracted mind. Your mind has to be fairly quiet, fairly concentrated, fairly calm in order to find out all these subtle details. You know, breath itself is a subtle phenomena, but finding out more subtle details within the breath is a kind of a challenge. So if one is able to find out all these subtle details in the breath, that indicates his mindfulness has fairly sharpened. His clear comprehension is in a very good state. The beauty of this meditation is, now, even when our mindfulness sharpen, now breath becomes subtler and subtler. Now we think, if we think in a rational manner, probably we might think, okay, now mindfulness is sharpened. Now this process has to be there forever like this. But the beauty of this meditation is, as a result of our observation, breath starts to calm down. Now it becomes more challenging, because now you can't find out where the beginning, where the middle, where the end, where's the gap. So you can't find it out. Now it's almost like a very kind of split second, you can feel something. Just the in-breath, some shade of in-breath is there. Then more kind of a gap may be possible. There's a longer gap now, before the beginning of the out-breath. Now out-breath also like a shade, like a almost unnoticeable. And then there's a longer gap before the beginning of in-breath. Now at this point, if we think that our mindfulness has reduced, or our mindfulness has weakened, then we have gone wrong. It is not the case. Here the mindfulness is there with the same intensity, or maybe even grown more than that, but the breath has evolved. Breath has changed, breath is evolving from gross breath to subtle breath, from subtle breath to subtler breath. And ultimately, it's almost extremely subtle and unnoticeable. And then we are reaching the fourth stage. Buddha says, Pasam bhayam kaya sankharam asasissami iti sikkhati. Now the duty of the observer, or the duty of the yogi, is to allow the mind to calm down, allow the breath to calm down. Now this is a kind of a knowledge, prehand knowledge that we need to keep in mind. When breath starts to calm down, when breath starts to disappear, once it starts to become subtler, rather than trying to force breathe and to sort of apply more energy or to introduce knotting, and all these things are wrong techniques. Rather, we have to support calming down. Now, it is the process has started calming down, breath is almost fading, disappearing, and we have to support it. Now, this is a kind of a restraint. So that is where Buddha significantly changed his wording in the pattern of his sermon. We are in the first one, sato asasati sato pasasati. Then digang asasanto digang asasami iti pajanati. The term pajanati is there. That means knowing. Then rasang asasanto rasang asasami iti pajanati. This is the term pajanati is there. Just knowing. Sabbakaya patisangedi asasissami iti sikkhati. The term is sikkhati. Sikkhati is a restrainment. And the last statement, the fourth statement is Pasam bhayam kaya sankharam asasissami iti sikkhati. The term again is sikkhati. So this is a kind of a training where we should not get agitated, and we should not fall asleep, we should not fall drowsy, or we should not introduce a different object change the object or start to doubt. Any of these things are not the restraint. Our restraint is to allow the process to calm down. Don't get upset. Don't get panicked. Don't think that oxygen may be less or any of these things. Rather, allow the process to happen. I mean, body knows the exact amount of oxygen it needs. Because now the mental process has fairly calmed down. Defilements are less and less. Nivarana, you know, the hindrances are less and less. So you don't need much oxygen. Now, it's a kind of a common sense. Once you are angry, you need a lot of oxygen. Once the mind is lustful, you need a lot of oxygen. But when you are sleeping, less oxygen is needed. Similarly, right now we are not sleeping, but mind is in a very relaxed position. So we are in a relaxed but attentive mood, attentive mode. So this is another stage where the body doesn't need much oxygen just for the maintenance work. Just for the sustenance work, it needs little amount of oxygen. So that amount is known by the body. Let the body decide that. Then we simply mind our own business. So simply allow the body to breathe as it likes. And now it is calming down and we are facilitating that calming down process. And it's very much like a baby is now going to sleep. So you are singing, you're tapping and giving all the comfortable environment for the baby to sleep. Now, when baby starts to sleep, don't tap again. Don't change the position. Don't try to talk because it's almost now trying to sleep. So you got to take off your hand. Now you can mind your own business. Let the process happen by itself. So this is where we need to change the effort, because you know the first stage, the second stage, the third stage, all these have a significant amount of effort, you know, the virya. But as we reach the fourth stage, so effort has to be at his minimal state. So if we are exerting too much effort, mind may not settle. This is a kind of a rule of thumb. For the samadhi to happen, the concentration to grow, you need only to have the necessary amount of effort. If you are applying too much effort, that itself causes not to concentrate the mind. But if you are exerting enough effort, necessary amount of effort, optimal amount of effort, that will allow the mind to settle, to tranquil, and to concentrate. But on the other hand, suppose you are not applying enough effort, then what happens is you fall asleep. So this is where the beautiful balance you need to find out. So I can simply warn you, but you yourself have to experiment. What is the exact amount of energy I have to maintain during this fourth stage? When the breathing calms down, there is no inner chatter, mind is also very gentle, the whole body appears very lightened. At this time, what is the necessary amount of energy? If I am not applying energy, mind falls asleep. If I am applying too much energy, I am not getting the proper balance, proper tranquility. So this is the training. Actually, these things may be available. I mean, this information is maybe available in a book. I can tell you. But practically finding out, practically maintaining that balance is the art. That is the practical knowledge. So it is like swimming. So I can teach you the technique of swimming and all these things, but you yourself have to jump to the water and you have to start swimming. Similarly, here also, you yourself have to find out what is the exact or necessary amount of effort that has to be maintained during each and every stage. So this is where the practicality becomes more and more important. That is why the theoretical knowledge is less valuable than sort of ounce of pragmatic knowledge. Ounce of pragmatic knowledge is more worthy than tons of theoretical knowledge, because this is completely a practical, where you know the exact amount of energy needed just to maintain this state where the mind is fairly calm down, not sleeping, not agitated, breath has almost disappeared, your attention is at the nostril, you are very vigilant, you are diligent, and you know you are alive. And the body has become very calm, very quiet, mind has almost like stopped. You know everything, you can hear everything, not sleeping. Mind has very relaxed. So this is something kind of a beautiful state that one can experience in one's meditation. Because you know, when a beginner starts his meditation, it's kind of a struggle because hindrances are troubling, your body aches, and even a slight noise destroys your meditation, disturbs your meditation, and a lot of disturbances are there. So with a lot of effort, he is passing the first stages. But if we are able to reach this fourth stage, that means you are now coming to a kind of an oasis where you are experiencing some amount of bliss, some amount of tamed mind, calm mind, tranquil mind, and body also starts to support the whole process. Therefore, it is like you are now reaping the good results of meditation. But don't think this is the end, but this is the beginning of another region or another state of meditation. But right now, the yogi knows what is maybe a little bit of samadhi. What is the nature of a concentrated mind is known to him. He has now tasted the samadhi. More and more you stay like this, the mind can divert either to deeper concentrations or mind can divert to the what you call the vipassana, yeah, the Vedananupassana section. So it depends. You don't need to purposely do anything. Rather, allow the mind to decide what it likes. So as it likes, we can change the path or we can do fine adjustments. But if mind is moving more towards the concentration, doesn't matter, you can taste it. Suppose you are a young person and you have enough energy and you like to have, you can experience these blissful states, and these are possible. So if the taste is there, if the possibility is there, you can taste those experiences as well. Get some tranquility experiences, get some collected mind experience, concentrated mind experience, and later we can use that concentration towards the vipassana. That also can happen naturally. So therefore, I feel this is enough for today as a next stage or the next state of Anapanasati. Probably next time we can start the fifth state as per the Anapanasati Sutta. Maybe back to Suranga.
Avasarai Bhante, we'll start the questions.
Okay.
So we've had, I think, 6 questions received. If you have any questions, you can use the form or raise your hands or send me a private message and I'll put the question up. Question number 1, walking mindfulness. Bhante, when doing walking meditation, I have been focusing mainly on my feet. So they say a word, gait or get, which is the walking pattern, pace, and comparison between steps. What about watching my breath? Sometimes I look at it and realize I have not been paying attention to it, but I always divert attention back to my feet. Is this the right thing to do? That's the end of the question.
Can you repeat the last question, Chatu? Last section?
Yep. The last sentence is, but I always divert attention back to my feet. Is this the right thing to do?
The previous one also?
Okay. I might read the whole thing. It's not very long. Yeah. Bhante, when doing walking meditation, I have been focusing mainly on my feet, gait, pattern, pace, and comparison between steps. What about watching my breath? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I look at it and realize I have not been paying attention to it, but I always divert attention back to my feet. Is this the right thing to do?
Yes. I mean, this is the right thing to do. It is not necessary to pay attention at the breath, because the walking meditation itself provides us a lot of experiences, a lot of exercises to develop mindfulness. I mean, if you are trying to do anapanasati while walking, then those kind of challenges won't be available. So you are not getting benefit of those challenges, those exercises. On the other hand, if you are doing walking meditation in the proper manner, while keeping your eyes open, just looking at maybe 5-6 feet ahead and keeping your attention on the sole, each and every leg, each and every movement of the leg, different textures of the floor, and all these things are actually a very good field for the mindfulness to grow. So therefore, it is not necessary to look at the breath while walking.
Question number 2, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, as I sit for sitting meditation, my mind is very quick to focus on the breath. I rarely feel the body sensations, etc., which are the early stages of the mindful sitting. I can see the in and out breath, how it gradually fades and gets shorter and shorter. I can see the beginning, middle, and end as it happens without labeling it. However, at this stage, my mind gets bored and I start to think of other things. I can, however, easily bring the mind to the concentrated breath again. Can you suggest how I would get around this boredom and what strategies I can use? As you say, it is much easier to concentrate with the gross breath. However, as it gets fine, it's difficult for the mind to stay with it. Thank you, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah, that is why the restraint is there. Now, that is why, if you can remember my explanation, just I have finished. So where Buddha is mentioning, sambhakaya patisangedi asa sissamiti sikkhati. Pasambhayam kaya sankharam asa sissamiti sikkhati. The term sikkhati, the Pali term sikkhati, means kind of a training, kind of a restrainment. So even though when the breath disappears, it appears boring, there is nothing to watch, nothing to do, this is the challenge. So we are kind of big doers. We always want to do something. Always our mind is agitated. We are doing this, we are doing that, not even just one thing. We are doing a couple of things at the same time, multitasking. But right now in mindfulness practice, we are doing one thing at a time. And here we have selected the kind of a process that is also a calm process, very neutral process. The process itself is kind of a boring process. Now, if you ask someone to watch breath, so they will ask from you, what a useless thing. I mean, it is utterly boring. No point of watching the breath. Why are you watching the breath? So, I mean, there is no price by watching the breath. But we know the value of it, even though it is kind of a neutral process, boring process. This boredom itself is a kind of a stage of anapanasati. So, Buddha is warning ourselves: don't get discouraged. Don't think that you need to change the object. Don't think that you need to force breathe. Rather, try to be with it as it is. So this boredom you have to appreciate. So there is nothing much to do. Mind is very quiet. Body is very quiet. Breath has disappeared. Just be. So this is the challenge. So I am not giving any, you can't change anything. Allow the mind to familiarize with this border. So we always escape from the border. That is the typical nature. whenever boredom arises in our mind, we either call our friend, or we go and watch the TV, or we go and watch a movie, or we take a newspaper to our hand, or we call our kid or to our wife or husband or to a neighbor or someone, or we take a book and read, or we go outside and look at something and all these things. So this is how we escape from boredom. But meditation helps us to go through it and to understand it and to understand how not to do anything and just be, just enjoy the present moment to its fullest amount. So therefore, please just be and enjoy boredom.
Question number 3, mindful walking. Dear Bhante, when I do walking practice, lately I start feeling very sleepy after 5 to 10 minutes. Apart from that, there is no problem in being mindful on my walking. After observing the differences in the left and the right foot continuously, and being aware of the walking process for more than 5 to 6 minutes, this sleepiness creeps in. Before that, I observe the differences and the demarcations of the sensations become less and less. When I notice the sleepiness creeping in, I try to be more and more mindful on the walking. I try to grasp more information. I can feel that I'm trying to use mindfulness as a tool or weapon to fight against sleepiness. Most of the time, I succeed after a lot of attempts. It feels like I have put mindfulness between myself and the sleepiness and used mindfulness to absorb the sleepiness. Is this a good practice? Sometimes I feel like not fighting with sleepiness, but trying to be mindful on the walking process, but I give in and be mindful of the sleepiness itself rather than fighting. Seek your advice and guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, actually nowadays, this is actually a common practice. Suppose you are used to a very hectic environment with a lot of noise and say you are interacting with so many people and you are kind of a heavy worker, workaholistic kind of a person, and you are used to multitasking. Now your mind is now like a workshop where many activities are going on at the same time. You are talking, you are listening, you are eating and watching and reading and multitasking, and mind is heavily loaded. Now, such a mind, when you are trying to take to a kind of a bored process like breathing or just to watch rising and falling, so it is quiet. I mean, very natural thing is that mind go to sleep. This is the in a way the to, nowadays for the working class people who are involved with some sort of an activity, who are involved with a lot of activities, for them this is the challenge, because what we are trying to do is not a that kind of extremely hectic thing or extremely exciting thing, but rather a very natural process. So that is where this natural process become utterly boring. And the mind find it not interesting, not attractive, and goes to sleep. So therefore, that is how we need to again and again restrain. You don't need, I mean, just giving it up is not the solution, but again and again training, doing it again and again is the only solution. I mean, there is no point of reading books or changing the object or changing the place or something like that. But again and again, practicing is the only solution. Because more and more you practice, more and more your mindfulness becomes refined. And your mind becomes more and more sensitive. So, as I said, now suppose we are able to measure the intensity of the breath. Let's give a kind of a mark. Suppose the gross breath is 100%. Now you can be mindful without sleeping at 100%. But once it reaches 70%, suppose you are now go to sleep. mind falls asleep. But once mindfulness refines, when the sensitivity of the mind increases, now you can stay vigilant, stay awake, even at 70%. But at 50%, you again fall asleep. Now suppose you are further improving. As a result of improved mindfulness, refined mindfulness, sharpened mindfulness, suppose now you can be awake at 50%. But once it reaches 40%, you fall asleep. So this is how it is evolving. Now slowly, slowly, when breath becomes subtler and subtler, there are stages we can't maintain mindfulness and mind falls asleep. But more and more we continue our practice, this sensitivity increases, mindfulness sharpens, and we will be able to maintain attentiveness, wakefulness, mindfulness, even at subtler levels of the breath. And therefore take it as a challenge, and practical involvement, just continuous practice, is the only solution.
Question number 4, mindful sitting. Venerable sir, my sitting practice, main object is a sensation of my sitting posture. I feel weight on my bottom, how knees are pressurized, straightness of my spine, hot and cold nature on my palms, etc. Sometimes the mind distracts away, but it is not a big issue, as I observe it comes back. When I become aware that I am not mindful of my posture, after some time when the mind settles, I feel very relaxed and comfortable on being with the posture. Sometimes I observe that the body slowly moves to a more and more comfortable some adjustments. I don't know if this happens automatically or if I do it intentionally, since I appreciate the comfort coming from the mindful posture. If I am delighted and attached to the meditation object, is it possible that I do it intentionally? I highly value your guidance and advice on the practice with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, at the beginning, we have to appreciate the object. We have to attach to the object. We have to just be with the object as much as possible. I mean, you can't immediately drop the object. Rather, we have a close relationship with the object. That is the technique. But we are not stopping there. So you simply be with the object as much as possible. You are observing the object, closely observing the object. As a result, this object starts to evolve. And now you know what is really happening to this object. And again, there's a significant amount of concentration developed. And you are not simply limiting your experience to this object. Rather, you start to observe various other objects as well. As a result, the wisdom starts to grow. And you know how each and every object behaves. What are the patterns available there? How they are arising? And what are the causes behind them? Likewise, now the wisdom factor also starts to contribute to your practice. So therefore, what you are doing is correct. So try to observe more and more subtle details available in this object. And then you may be able to find out more and more different behavioral patterns available in this object.
Question number 5, mindful walking. Venerable Bhante, the last 2 weeks I have asked 2 different questions about my practice, and the answer for both questions was to try walking meditation. The first week I did, when I first woke up and just before my sitting meditation, I just felt sleepy and didn't think much about it. But you were right, it did wake me up for my sitting practice. Last Sunday after the session, I decided to do some sitting meditation. Feeling distracted, I thought of your advice and the report of another participant. I decided to be open-minded and watch my feet. I am usually so distracted by my other senses. For the first time in my life, I properly observe my walking pattern. At a slow pace, my walking pattern is asymmetric. Left foot lands on the heel, then the outer foot, little toe, then big toe. The right heel is followed by the ball of the foot, then the big toe and little toe together, followed by the middle toes. When the pace is faster, both feet are symmetrical, like the description of the left foot. For the first time, I felt like I got something out of my walking practice and saw an improvement in my sitting practice and daily mindfulness as a result. Thank you for your guidance. I am seeing by experience and experimenting some progress in my practice, slowly but surely. That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, but your approach is correct. So more you sort of find out or kind of introduce some interest. So even though walking is a natural, very ordinary process, now we are adding some value to it and we are taking it as a exercise and finding out what are the sort of unknown areas in this ordinary experience. How each and every toe touching and which one is touching the first, how heel is touching, what are the differences, and all these things are sort of helping us to arouse mindfulness, to sharpen mindfulness and to improve clear comprehension. You are clearly knowing each and every object. I can remember a beautiful simile given by Sayadaw Pandita. Yeah, he says, suppose you are walking at night and suppose there's a kind of black stick available there. But there's a little bit of, shaking nature is down to the black stick, and suppose you have a flashlight and you are focusing the flashlight to that object, and then you understand, oh, something is going on. Now you come little closer, now you can find out it's more and more kind of a jumping, it's more and more changing, more and more movement is there into that stick. Suppose you come further, closer and closer to this stick. And now you recognize, now you understand, it is not a stick. It's kind of a series of black ants walking one after the other. And at the end, when you are looking at it far away, you understood it. You felt it like a stick, black stick. But once you look at it very closely, you understand it is not a stick, but it's a series of ants walking one after the other, not touching each other, one and after the other. So similarly, when our clear comprehension improves, there are a lot of details are available, and the net result is something that we observe when we are observing from the sort of far end. But more we closely, carefully, then more and more details, subtle details are available, and that is where the sort of the insights are arising, the sort of the ground is preparing for the insights to arise. Yeah.
Question number 6, mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, this is a comment about my breathing awareness this week. I found my breathing practice improved slightly in the last week. In that, I noticed more detail about where on the nostril the air was touching, which nostril the air passed, etc. Until last week, my right nostril is the one I noticed. But this week, I noticed the air in my left nostril as well. So then, I decided to experiment, looking at the length and comparison of breaths, as you mentioned. In general, my in-breaths are shorter than the out-breaths. Sometimes I can compare the in-breaths and the out-breath and know which is shorter and longer. Other times I feel like I need a ruler to measure it. The difference is so minimal. I find it easier to notice the in-breath to out-breath transition because the gap seems shorter. Between the out-breath and in-breath, there is the long pause, and I find it much harder to notice when the switch happens. I have a new distraction this week, however. Sometimes I get a running commentary in my mind, like the words I should be writing in my meditation report or questions that I have. That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, probably you can try a vernier caliper instead of the ruler because breath becomes more and more shorter. At that time, ruler also might not work. So anyway, but your experience is quite good. So don't worry about ruler or vernier caliper or anything. So it's a kind of a, you know, relative measurement that we mentally take. So breath might evolve. It may be longer, it may be shorter, and all these things are possibilities. So you just have to have an open mind and have a kind of a approximate measure as per your perception. And that is more than enough. And as you grow, the breath may even become subtler and subtler and almost disappear. So this is the exercise. This is the challenge. And there may be something mentioned. Chatu, can you repeat the final couple of statements?
Okay. Yep. I find it easier to notice the in-breath to out-breath transition because the gap seems shorter. Between the out-breath and in-breath, there is a longer pause, and I find it much harder to notice when the switch happens. I have a new distraction this week, however. Sometimes I get a running commentary in my mind, right, like the words.
Right, right. Understood. Okay. Yeah, basically, now these are very common things. And while meditation is going on, especially when we are going through some good new experience, then mind starts to talk. Mind sort of a commentary starts and it's telling us, advising us, do this, do that, and include this to the report and all blah, blah things. But all these are utter nonsense. You simply have to tell the mind to shut up and go back and just, I can continue. So basically all these commentaries are the ones actually we have to avoid. So don't give any significance to these commentaries. Simply discard them. And more and more, maintain your attention. Put your attention to breath. And this is the exercise. This is the restrainment we need to have.
So I think these are the last two questions. So question number 7. Mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, in sitting practice, I have struggled to find the point of focus. When I bring my attention to the tip of the nose, my head nods with the breath. As a parallel process, I notice the rising and falling of the abdomen at a slower pace than the breath at the tip of the nose. When I watch the rising and falling, after some time, the focus returns to the nostril. At times, the movement of the head moves to involve the whole body. Further, I notice in-breathing by the direction of my breath. I am unable to see any other phenomena of the breath or out-breath. Very occasionally, after the shaking, the breath becomes more calm, but doesn't completely go away. When it is very subtle, the breath becomes rough again. Dear Bhante, please guide me how I can progress. May you be blessed with good health and be able to carry on with the teaching of the Dhamma. That's the end.
Yeah. So actually, this kind of cycles can happen more and more. So say breath becomes subtle, again breath becomes gross, again it becomes subtle, again it becomes gross. So we simply have to allow it to happen. So, I mean, if you have a kind of an open mind without having any prejudices, without having any preferences, then that is much easier. But if we think that the breath has to behave in a certain manner as according to our wish, then it is difficult. So therefore, don't give any sort of preferences to the mind. Just have a kind of open mind. Whatever it is, I am just watching. Either it is longer, either it is shorter, either it is warmer, either it is warmer, cooler, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I am ready for that. I acknowledge that. I appreciate the way it is. And again, there's another motto you can use basically thinking that this is good enough, not expecting otherwise, but sort of satisfying yourself. Right now, breath is warmer, maybe shorter. This is good enough. Right now, the breath is warmer, maybe appearing a little longer. This is good enough. I'm not expecting otherwise. Maybe now breath is calming down. This is good enough. I am not expecting the breath to disappear. But right now it is calming down. Doesn't matter. This is enough. So actually we need to have sort of these kind of little spiritual qualities embedded to our practice. Then the practice actually grows well. But if we are putting sort of agenda to the practice, thinking it has to behave in this manner, then it sort of becomes a little artificial and little strenuous, and sometimes when it is happening in a different way, we get upset. So these are difficulties there. Rather than doing that, whatever it is, I am ready, I am accepting it, I am appreciating it, and I am open for that, I am ready for that. So if you are able to maintain this kind of an attitude, then it is much better. By the way, I mean, you are doing well, so you simply have to little bit of add this spiritual parts as well, then your mindfulness will further refine.
Question number eight, this is the last question, theory one. Dear Bhante, as I understand it, listening to suttas helps us to guide our practice. I have listened to a few retreats of yours where you have taken a sutta and explained it and how we can apply it to our practice. Is there any order of the suttas in which we should listen to? I have found the Satipatthana Sutta very valuable in my practice at the beginning. I would be grateful if you can recommend any others that would follow on from the Satipatthana Sutta to guide our practice. Thank you, Bhante. That's the end.
Yeah, as you quite correctly mentioned, Satipatthana Sutta is one of the best suttas. Go hand in hand with our practice. And again, Anapanasati Sutta is another very good sutta. Then Kayagata Sati Sutta is another one. Lot of suttas are there. Actually, myself and respected Bhante if we are given a chance, we are trying to take that kind of suttas which are more contributing towards our practice. And at the beginning, all these suttas are quite important and explains the practice in a big picture manner, not simply like a partial way, but giving us the total picture. But there are various other suttas explaining different parts, different aspects of the practice. Say for example, now we are discussing Kacchanagotta Sutta in the ongoing retreat. That actually explains about the Sammaditti, more towards the Vipassana, how the Panya, the wisdom develops and all these things, what are the techniques available, what are the sort of types of ignorance we have in our mind. So all these things are included in the suttas. So therefore it is, so as I said, Anapanasati Sutta, Satipatthana Sutta, Kayagata Sati Sutta, so these are very much the good suttas for beginners to get on to the practice.
Thank you, Bhante. That's the last of the questions. I think we're very close to end of time. And I think we're very limited on time today. So I'll pass to Arunaya, unless someone has something to say. I'll just pass directly to him.